As a consequence, many of these enlightened thinkers tended to be anti-clerical, and Enlightenment thought was interpreted certainly by the church as being anti-religious, anti-clerical in its implications, especially in France, where the church was associated more directly with the traditional power establishment. Occasionally, Enlightenment thought took the form of overt atheism, though this tended to be surprisingly rare. More often, one found an attempt to find some sort of concordance between religion and reason, so that one saw the emergence of things like deism, in which a number of enlightened thinkers argued that God acts exclusively through natural laws and that man knows God exclusively through natural reason, so that reason and religion can be brought into sympathy. Pantheism also in the same time, seeing God in everything, in nature, moving God beyond established religion. What the Enlightenment certainly did represent was an assault on traditional dogma and the traditional organization of the church. One sees, really for the first time since the Protestant Reformation, widespread discussions about why is the clergy necessary? Why is the organization of the church necessary? If God is revealed and we know God through these other means, then why do we need the church? And, of course, during the same period, the church tended to play its role as villain with great élan. The Pope placed the encyclopedia on the index of banned books, assaulting in one form or another all of the major ideas, particularly the secular thrust of Enlightenment ideas, so that one found the dynamic developed very easily of seeing the church as an oppressive force for superstition and blind obedience. Well, if one, even by implication, attacks the church, then what does this mean about monarchy? What does it mean about the established political order? If the political order is based on the notion of divine right monarchy, then what does this suggest? An attack on, if one doesn't need the clergy, if one doesn't need the church, then what does this mean for divine right monarchy? There was not so much a direct assault on the principle of divine right monarchy, but it was certainly implicit in much of Enlightenment thought, and in some cases quite explicit. Locke in England, his two treatises on government that had been published back in 1688-89, had argued that man, a being of reason, possessed natural rights of life, liberty, and property, and that government, he argued, was a contract. It was a contract to protect those rights. If government breaks that contract, he argued, then the citizens had the right to restructure that contract, renegotiate it, or as an absolutely last result, actually to rebel. Well, this doesn't sound like absolutist monarchy, and it didn't certainly sound that way to the crowned heads of Europe. Or closer to the outbreak of the French Revolution, the work of Montesquieu, who in 1748 would publish The Spirit of the Laws, in which he argued, among other things, for the separation of powers. Americans tend to think about this and think about sort of constitutional reform, the American form of government. But what it really did was to suggest that there had to be checks and balances on the power of the monarch, that divine right absolutist monarchy could not be justified by the power of reason. Power and privilege in a just society would be based on reason, not on ritual, not on tradition, not because that's the way it had always been done. One saw this most overtly in France, but it was also important in the German states as well. In Germany, it's very interesting, one of the arguments, we'll come back to this as we proceed on, was that somehow the Enlightenment never crossed the Rhine that one of the problems of German political culture is that the Enlightenment seemed to stop, put on the brakes when it reached the Rhine, and that therefore Germany would become the great home of Romanticism and rejected Enlightened philosophy. I think this is a very problematic argument, but we'll return to it. It does. The Enlightenment does take a different thrust in German Central Europe than it does in the West, and in a very revealing way.